It's The Takeaway, and I'm Duarte Geraldino. The border is now a defining issue in American politics. On Tuesday, in lieu of getting his wall, President Donald Trump promised soldiers would soon be guarding the U.S.-Mexican border.
We have very bad laws for our border, and we are going to be doing some things. I've been speaking with General Mattis. We're going to be doing things militarily. Until we can have a wall and proper security, we're going to be guarding our border with the military. That's a big step. We really haven't done that before, or certainly not very much before.
Now, it's not clear where that plan is headed, but there is a border policy in place. The reason you may not have heard about it, it's largely invisible. It's called Prevention Through Deterrence. It started in the mid-1990s. Its development and consequences are the focus of a new three-part series from our partner at WNYC Radiolab called The Border Trilogy. Jason DeLeon is an anthropology professor at the University of Michigan. He studies the border and worked with Radiolab to examine the policy. And Latif Nasser is a reporter for Radiolab. Here's Latif.
Prevention through deterrence is basically just another name for the National Border Patrol strategy enacted in 1994. And basically the idea of the strategy was to block off, you know, the most heavily trafficked areas of illegal immigration, which were, you know, in cities like El Paso or San Diego or south of Tucson, but then leave open as the only routes to cross these pretty remote and naturally hostile areas like the desert. That then led to people crossing in these more remote areas and then people dying. And what we found in part of our reporting, and this is also in the work of the sociologist Timothy Dunn, is that one of the roots of this policy is this lawsuit. There was this school in El Paso. It's literally right across the border. It's called Bowie High School. And what happened was that the Border Patrol, they had, as part of their strategy in the early 90s of apprehending people who would cross, they would basically spend a lot of time at this school because there was a hole in the fence across from this school. So a lot of migrants would be crossing illegally. The Border Patrol would be stationed at this school. In doing that, they would also be harassing a lot of students and staff at this school. And at some point, the students and staff said, we're tired of this, and they sue the Border Patrol. Very unlikely, they win. They win against the Border Patrol. But in response to that, because it was a big national news story, that was one of the factors that then made the Border Patrol sort of sit back and think, you know what, we need to rethink our whole strategy. And as part of that, they came up with this totally different strategy. Instead of waiting for people to cross and then apprehending them, the new strategy would be to sort of position the Border Patrol agents on the border, right on the border, to prevent people from coming in the first place. And so that was sort of in some ways the genesis of this policy, unlikely as it is to come from, a bunch of high school kids standing up for their rights.
There's also a death count in the desert as a result of this.
So one of the folks we talked to as part of this reporting was a former Border Patrol sector chief of the Tucson sector, so basically Arizona. You know, his tenure there was in the 90s, and he talked about in the early 90s the number of people that would die and that they would find in the desert, you know, it was single digits. And then sort of as it went on into the late 90s and early 2000s, as this strategy, as the flow of migrant traffic started to change, you know, the numbers started creeping up. They went higher and higher and higher. You know, they passed 100, like 150 a year kind of thing. Those deaths really started to tick up as people who were wanting to cross couldn't go through the urban areas. They had to find another way.
And that's supposed to be the deterrence. I mean, it's just so problematic, the thought that this policy would push people to an area that's more dangerous, and obviously that's a deterrence, and that area is littered with bodies. And people know this. And so knowing that, in theory, should have prevented people from taking that route. But it actually didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and we even talked to some of the people who made this policy, like the former INS Commissioner Doris Meissner, and I think they really underestimated the drive of some of these people who are looking to provide for their family or to reunite with their family.
What has been one of the most important consequences over time has been the tenacity of people coming to the United States wanting to come to the United States and the lengths to which people will go in order to do that.
They really underestimated the drive that these people really would go through the desert. And that, you know, miscalculation has had really fatal consequences.
When we talk about that miscalculation, I want to turn to Jason because you've been studying the real life effects of this policy. You did experiments on pigs. How was that related to this?
Well, one of the things that I had become increasingly interested over the years was, you know, what happens to people who die during this process? And there had been a lot of speculation when I started this work about what the desert would potentially do to a body. And people would say, well, maybe it gets mummified, maybe animals eat it, maybe there's a lot of bodies out there that we're not finding because nature is destroying them. And what I found was that nobody had been doing any kind of systematic research on this issue. The Pima County Officer of the Medical Examiner, I mean, they were recovering hundreds of bodies a year, but everyone kind of knew that that wasn't the full picture. And so I basically took a crash course in forensic science. I had been trained in archaeology, and I learned really quickly that pigs had been used for the last couple of decades as a proxy for the human body in different types of forensic experiments. What really set me off with this was being out in the desert in 2011 and coming across a fragment of a person, you know, a human arm, a tooth, some bones that had been eaten and regurgitated by animals. So I kind of went into it knowing, okay, if we do this experiment, if we take pigs, we dress them up like migrants and put them into different environmental contexts and monitor that, I think that nature's going to do some damage to these bodies. We didn't really have a sense of what it would look like, though. And what it ended up being was, in some instances, in less than 36 hours, you have dozens of vultures skeletonizing and completely ripping apart 150, 160-pound skeleton body in a really short amount of time. And then water impacting the bodies, ants breaking up bone and carrying pieces away. So it became obvious pretty quickly during these experiments that nature is erasing many people out there in this environmental context.
It used to be that the easiest way to find a number for the dead is to count the bodies. And I know you found pieces, but you're telling me that there are a lot of bodies that just don't exist anymore. So is there any sort of estimate of the real number of people that die crossing the desert?
It just depends on who you ask, because it's thousands. I mean, in Arizona, the body count is, you know, it depends on how you calculate it, but between 3,000 and 5,000 bodies. People go back and forth about those sorts of counts. But if you look at the missing persons reports in Mexico and coming from Central America, those numbers are far greater. And the problem, though, is that by design, prevention through deterrence brutalizes these people. It uses the desert to do it, so nobody can really be blamed for this. So the Border Patrol will say, well, if you die in the desert, that's your fault for going into the desert. Nobody wants to say, well, we made this policy where that would be the path of least resistance. So this thing happens. Nature is conscripted to do this border enforcement work, but it also happens in a place where nobody can see it. So it's completely invisible, these dead bodies. And then with enough time, nature will then erase these individuals. And so it becomes impossible to get a firm count on this.
So Latif, you actually found a report from 1997 saying that if there were more deaths in the desert, that would be a sign that the policy was actually working. What does that say about the current practice? I know you spoke with the person who developed the policy in El Paso. Here's what he had to say.
This was my effort at stopping a chaotic, out-of-control situation that everybody hated. It's easy to criticize, but it's a hell of a lot harder to say, okay, if not this, then what?
Explain this justification a little bit more.
So, and first, let me just quick say that report, I can't take credit for finding that. That was actually something that Jason found. But the point that Sylvester Reyes is bringing up there, the problems that Sylvester Reyes was tackling in El Paso, they were real problems. I mean, it was a chaotic scenario, and he brought that situation under control, right? Controlling the border. But I think what's so damning about that report from 1997, saying that the people who framed this policy, or at least the GAO that was looking at that strategy document, were saying, look, like, we have an inkling that this is going to happen. This is a foreseeable thing. The policy that was in place before prevention through deterrence of letting people sort of cross the border in these urban areas, there's a very high political cost to that, that there is not in letting migrants cross in the desert where, you know, know, where people who are voting don't see it and, you know, make hay about it. There is a lot of politics in this, I think, that prevention through deterrence is a lot easier a policy to put forward, even though it has these fatal costs.
So, Jason, what's the current state of the Border Patrol under Trump?
So there's a lot of different opinions within the Border Patrol, I think, about this policy, and also not a lot of common knowledge about the evolution of it. And, you know, you're asking about the current state of things. We don't even talk about prevention through deterrence anymore as a program. It's just taken for granted that this is the working security paradigm that we've had for a long time, to the point where it doesn't show up in documents anymore. Everyone just knows that this is what they're doing. The sleight of hand that has happened, the kind of hocus pocus, is they have shifted the discourse away from saying the desert can be this physical barrier to not talking about the desert at all, but now to say migrants are dying in the desert because smugglers bring them through the desert, and the Border Patrol is committed to rescuing those migrants. And so they have changed their approach now to say, look, we've got things like the BorStar, which is their search and rescue that's out there looking for migrants. They've got their missing migrants program that's in place trying to say, look, we are working to help identify these bodies. But nobody at the agency wants to say, well, this whole problem that we are putting Band-Aids on through fancy brochures and, you know, these press conferences, this whole problem is systemic. It's been going on for two decades, and we don't want to cop to it anymore.
Lastly, is there any talk of change, or is this just something that we are willing to accept with our current immigration policy?
When we talked to Doris Meissner as part of our reporting, she was the commissioner of the INS at that time. So she was, in a way, she was the head. She was in charge of the Border Patrol, and she was the one who really wrote that 1994 document, that prevention through deterrence, that outlined that whole strategy. She still is sort of active in this world in thinking about this issue. And she basically said that even though she does feel sorry about these deaths and that something needs to be done about it, but she basically said that in her 40 years of working on this issue, in a way, this is maybe the most hopeless time, that we're so far from having a kind of open, frank conversation about these issues and how to sort of approach the border in a non-hypocritical way. We're not even having the conversation to even then go on to fix it. We're so far from in any way changing or fixing this problem.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. Latif Nasser, reporter for Radiolab, and Jason DeLeon, anthropology professor at the University of Michigan. He studies the border.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much.